Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
Hey, I'm Holland Roden.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Poncio.
Hi, I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hi, I'm Dylan Sprayberry.
This is Megan Tandy.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh.
Woo!
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, episode 96. For our first proper recap episode of season 5, the premiere has happened and we are here to talk about it, which is very exciting and weird, and it feels like it's been a very long time since we've done it. Karen and I'm Natalie, if you're just tuning into this podcast for the first time this season. My co-host is Karen. Say hi, Karen.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Karen. Hi, Natalie. And we have three other teammates who do various roles with the podcast, Brooke, Courtney, and Donya, but you will mostly be hearing us doing the talking part, because that is the way the cookie crumbles on this podcast. And if you want to find out why, you can listen to our Ask Me Anything podcast, because it's discussed at length there. But we'll be going forward this season to recap each episode. Hopefully we'll have some of our other co-hosts or some friends or guests on with us at different points to talk about the show as well. But each week you'll be hearing a recap podcast from us, you know, discussing and theorizing everything about the episode that's just aired. Is there anything else that you would like to tell people if they are for potential only picking up this podcast in season 5, Karen?
I'm sorry we sound like we don't know what we're doing. It's been a very long time since we've done a recap.
Wow. Do you have anything more positive to say, Karen?
We love Teen Wolf.
Yes, that's true. Do you mean like as opposed to like hate watching it or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, some people do that. I don't really get that. But, you know, if that's your cup of tea, okay. But we don't do that.
This is a relatively positive podcast, not indiscriminate fangirling, but it's not dedicated to picking apart the problems with everything. We do call stuff out or ask, why did that happen? But I have certainly been on a podcast before which devolved into a lot of criticism. that was about Glee, in case anyone's wondering. And this is not really the tone that we have here, because we do have a lot of appreciation for the show and what goes on behind the scenes. So that is the kind of adventure you'll be embarking on with us if you stay with us for season 5. So hopefully that's good. If you want to reach us, you can reach us always on our Twitter, which is NATW Podcast. You can email us, natwpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram, which is also an ATW podcast, and we should be seeing a bit of photographic action there over the summer. And you can follow us on Tumblr, which is the full word, Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast. And we have a lot of information, news, etc., go up on the podcast via some of our other podcast members. They do a lot of work with answering asks and grabbing news as soon as it comes out, as well as Karen writing up official news articles for Hyperball.com, which is the great and wonderful parent site that hosts this podcast. So you can also always comment on the podcast page on Hyperball as well. Jumping straight into Season 5, Episode 1, Creatures of the Night, premiere of Season 5, we always start our episodes with a favourite quote moment from the episode, which sometimes doesn't make so much sense because we haven't talked about the episode in context yet. But if you've seen the episode, you'll know what we're talking about. So that's great. My favorite this week was Styles talking to Scott about how he left things with Kira, just because as soon as Scott said what had happened. Even before Styles reacted, I was just like, oh man. Like, I kind of knew exactly where it was going immediately. And then Scott was kind of like, what's wrong with that? And Styles says, did you mean, like, don't worry, we're exclusive, go have fun with other guys? And then he kind of turns to Malia and asks the same question, and she proves his point. And I thought it was such just a real, ridiculous, but also true, awkward teenage relationship moment, because as soon as Scott said what he said, I also interpreted it the same way as Styles as well. So I just found that very funny.
My favorite quote was from the Queen, Melissa, who says she's like, she walks into the house and she has to go back out to the hospital. She thinks Scott's upstairs. So she's like, dinner's in the fridge. There's nothing in the fridge. So I'm going to leave you some money to order in. I don't have any money. And it's just this like ongoing thing where she's like, you know, just trying to be the mom and being like, well, this is the situation we're in. Can you, like, buy some dinner? Then she realizes he's not even there, and she's just like, okay, I'm going to go to work now. And it was just it was just perfect comedic timing.
Yeah, it was lots of fun. I also want to give a shout-out to my other favorite quote of the episode, which was the tiny sigh of, ugh, really? That Styles does when Scott mentions that there was something that Deaton told him. Basically, when he's like, oh, it just reminds me, it was just something Deaton said, and Styles just goes, ugh. And then Scott goes on to explain his point. So Styles' tiny sigh of frustration that Scott still listens to Deaton is my actual favorite quote of the episode, just so you know. But I don't know if it counts.
Fair enough. We'll make it count.
We're going to go into our discussion point by point chronologically of the episode, and we're going to try and keep this discussion sort of equal between our voices so that we don't annoy you, one of us or the other doesn't annoy you too much. Let's be real, it'll probably be me, but it's fine. That's my role and that's what happens. But Karen will start. And then we'll try and talk about all the points that we found important or that we have questions about. And yeah, it'll be great, hopefully. So go ahead, Karen.
Okay, so it opens up on this girl in the shower, and she's in this catatonic state. And we realize pretty quickly that it's Lydia. And I guess the first thing I wanted to point out was how they panned, like, up her side to show the scar on her side. And I don't know if that was meant to be like, oh, this is Lydia, you know, our first clue that it's Lydia, or if that's going to have, like, more of a significant meaning. Did you have any thought about that?
I'm so sorry, Karen. Can you just repeat that? I just lost a bit of that.
Okay. The camera pans up the side, and there's the scar there, and I wasn't sure if they meant to do that as like, oh, hey, this is Lydia, she has a scar on her side, or if it was meant to mean something else, like if they're going to come back to that for some reason.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that that's an injury she has obtained sometime during this season, and that, yes, it will probably be, like, I don't think that that's meant to be an identifying mark of Lydia's that we already know about, if you know what I mean. I think that that's going to be something that she has gotten some way during the season, or it could be a burn from their tasers, maybe, that she shows that she's been, like, attacked by them before. Like, I think it's going to be something that we see how she obtains, yeah.
Okay, because I thought maybe it was the scar from where Peter bit her, but I wasn't sure if
it also could
still
be that.
But I think it's on the wrong side now that I think about it. I think it's meant to be on her left side. So,
yeah. That's possible. My big question, I suppose, about this situation, with everything that happens to her is whether the catatonic state was real or not, whether the woman, you know, the mean nurse was right, or whether she was just horrible, as you know, whether she was horrible and right or horrible and wrong about Lydia faking the catatonic state, if you know what I mean.
I absolutely think Lydia was faking it. I mean, she wakes up pretty easily, and I don't think if you're coming out of a catatonic state, it would be that quick of a switch. So I think she was faking it, which is very smart for her.
Yeah, I can see that being true, but I can also, there's something about the stuff that ends up happening, like the stuff that she displays and the fact that, you know, we'll talk a bit more about all of the points that happen in this scene, but just everything that happens, given that it appears to kind of be still inside her head, like with everything, I'm wondering if it actually was kind of a weird automatic thing rather than a planned conscious thing. I don't know. It's very confusing to me. But yeah, do you want to tell us about everything that happens?
Yeah, let's start with the creepy guy with the needle, because I think out of everything in this entire episode, this made me feel the most uncomfortable when he was like jabbing her with the needle and like getting mm-hmm. pleasure from it. Like that was some serious acting, let me tell you that. But it was like, ugh, sent shivers down my spine.
It was unpleasant, very, and it seemed like he was trying to take blood from her or mix something into her blood. You definitely saw the needle withdrawing some stuff rather than injecting some stuff. But it
was
like,
I think it was meant to be a sedative, because that's what the female orderly said.
No, that's true, because they're like, she wants catatonic, give it to her. I don't know, because it definitely looked like, I don't know, some weirdness was going on. But, yeah, that was rather awful. And, yeah, he definitely, why is everyone that works there, like, such a dick? Like, why is this place, are they corrupted, are their brains corrupted by it? Or do they just find, like, the worst humans on the planet, and they're like, hey, I've got a really good job for you. It's working out. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't understand. I kind of like the idea that maybe they're corrupted by Eichenhaus itself, that it's such a dark place with such a horrible history that people just go crazy there.
Yeah, I'd believe that. It's very unpleasant. But, I mean, if she was faking the catatonic state, for her to, like, lie there with the pain of, like, getting badly injected, that's, like, in her eyes not to even flicker, that's insane. Like, that's a lot. And so it's doable, especially in fiction, I suppose, but it's makes me wonder if everything that happens, like, the way that she kind of wakes up, like, it's like a defense, like, that what happens is a defense mechanism, an automatic defense mechanism, not a planned escape tactic, if you know what I mean. I'm really curious about that.
The female orderly did say she was very committed to her role, but at the same time, I kind of like the idea of it being a defense mechanism. That's interesting.
Yeah, it was really, like, everything that happens, like, with the fighting, like, with the knowing how to use the powers like that. Like you don't just wake up and, I don't know, it's really confusing to me.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the powers between, like, her ninja skills and her new and improved Banshee powers, which we have talked about in our last episode when we did the Season 5 news roundup, we didn't find out how she got these powers and how she was trained in this episode, but I'm really hoping we don't have to wait too long because it's so cool, everything that she's doing, and I'd like to see her training or something.
Yeah, like, again, I can't work out. It's kind of like how Kira automatically knew how to use the sword once she kind of, like, the Kitsune spirit took her over or something like that. Like, I feel like something about her movements was very, like, I totally believe that Lydia could, like, plot out and absolutely prepare for her escape from a terrible situation. But I also feel like that those powers are so weird that, and that it could be, as I said, an automatic defense mechanism that she doesn't really know what she's doing. But that said, her face when that was happening was a fair bit sharper. She wasn't like, I'm staring off into the distance while ninja kicking people, you know, like her. So I don't know. I'm really curious to find out what that whole plan was. Obviously, this seems to be, as we've said, at the end of the season, you know, before everything else happens. So Fun times.
Holland Roden has this really little, very subtle sort of quirk when she does scenes like this where she's sort of looking around and then she gets this, like, determined look on her face and sort of just like, all right, I'm just going to have to go for it. And for some reason, I just really like that. And I think it's really appropriate for the scene where she's trying to escape and she's like, I don't want to have to fight anyone. I just want to get out of here. And she's like, well, crap, now I'm cornered. So I'm just going to have to fight my way out of here. And I just really like watching her do that.
Yeah, those jump kicks are really something. But like, and it's weird, like the Banshee powers, like she seems to be able to like basically use energy, like blow people away with her, her Banshee powers, literally, or like that's where the strength comes, that she doesn't have super strength in her kicking or anything, but that it's like she uses the Banshee powers while also doing a physical movement, and it like she like airbends them away from her.
That will not be the first Avatar themed thing we reference we put in here tonight. I can guarantee that. Last thing for this though is Aiden showing up. He's a hallucination, unfortunately, but it was nice to see Max Carver back, even for a little bit. And he tells her that her treatment is not done yet. And like we said last time, don't really know what this means, if she went involuntarily, if somebody put her in there, if she was captured or what, but just glad to see him back.
I'm wondering if she's hallucinating him. Was this entire scenario of her escaping with the ninja powers, was that literally all inside her head? Was she still lying on the bed in a catatonic state and just imagining all of that?
Definitely a possibility. I have some theories later on that I don't know are valid or not, but when we get there, yeah, there's more to that, I think, than meets the eye.
Yeah, it's creepy. So cutting to the present day, presumably, we learn that it's the last night of summer, and that Styles is really hung up on getting everyone to meet up together at the school. We'll find out why a little bit later. But he's really, really hung up on this, and him and Scott are, we find out that it's been about 6 months, that nothing particularly good or bad has happened, but that they've just been chill, probably getting ice cream, you know, going to the beach, like all of those normal things that we never get to see. Because we only tune back in when some drama goes down. But we find out that they're kind of, Styles is really driven about keeping the group together. He has a plan for him and Scott to live together in San Francisco and for everyone to go to a Bay Area college, and that they're all going to hang out in San Francisco. And he's like looking at all apartments, and Scott's like, maybe chill, like we'll get into college first and then plan this maybe. But Scott is super hung up on it. Styles is super hung up on it, and you know, becoming, we learn very, very quickly that he's very determined about this. First question, I suppose, is, are you, you know, surprised that Styles is the one that has the most concern about this of the group?
I guess not really surprised. I'm more surprised that it doesn't seem like Scott is more worried, considering he has a pack. You would think that he would want everyone to stay together. Maybe he's just more confident in the fact that they're going to stay together, but given Styles' personality, it doesn't surprise me that he's worried about everyone going off in their separate directions.
Yeah, there was definitely a moment when I thought Styles had finally cracked and thought that the Jeep was a person, because the first thing that we learned is that, you know, they're trying to move in together, Scott and Styles, presumably, and he's like, oh, we live in the area, the Jeep's going to go through a lot of clutches. And Scott's like, you're bringing the Jeep? And Styles is like, yeah, don't you remember the plan? No one gets left behind. And I'm like, the Jeep's not a person. But apparently the plan is no one gets left behind, including the Jeep. So that's his vision. That's what he wants. And he's very hung up on it. Scott is more worried about the fact that we've got the, what was the phrasing that Deaton used? Regression to the mean, which has been talked about in a previous episode a million years ago. And the idea that basically nothing can stay super bad forever, but nothing can stay super good forever. And at the moment, we're just kind of normal. We basically, I would say a really good way to put that is that we never see the mean on Teen Wolf. We see basically when something spikes above or below the mean. And then, you know, the 9 months of the year that we're not watching Teen Wolf, they're going and having average lives, which is on the mean. So, yeah, basically regression to the mean. Scott's worried that things are going to get really bad, or, you know, maybe they'll get really good. But he's worried about another upheaval happening, and literally, just as he says it, you know, lightning strikes and everything goes crazy. But we also learn that they're having this entire conversation while Liam is behind them, chained to a tree, because they're training him to be better at dealing with the full moon. It's a full moon night. They're waiting for Liam to basically deal with the transformation, and they're having this private conversation, and Liam's like, excuse me, guys, I'm chained to the tree. So was that moment when you realized that Liam was there too, did you laugh heartily? Did you find that hilarious?
Oh, definitely. You know what? Liam was kind of like on point this entire episode.
Yeah, I love him so much.
I do. And I love his interactions with Scott and just the way that he kind of clings to him and looks to him like he's his hero. And it's really amazing. But my favorite part is why they decided to chain him to the tree this month, because of what happened last month.
Yeah, apparently last month the sheriff's station got some interesting phone calls about a naked dog boy running through the streets causing havoc. So he lost control and ran around naked, and the main question is, why is he naked? Apparently it was really hot. You know, it is summer in California, but, you know, still. So Liam is obviously still a little bit troubled by the werewolf change, which is supposed to be expected. And he kind of convinces Scott that he's in control, that he's, you know, he's, the moon is on him and nothing is happening and he's fine. But then we learn that he has cut up his own hands, like digging his claws in, like his claws growing, but him digging them into his own hands. So he was obviously, you know, still struggling. And if Scott is planning to leave, you know, to go to college, then he's going to have this down by that time, because he is really dependent on Scott more than anyone else in the pack. He's dependent on Scott. They do have a really great chemistry, Scott and Liam, which can be interpreted in a number of ways, but I enjoy it regardless. I really like them sort of together, but he needs Scott more than anyone else in the pack does. So maybe Scott's not committed to Stiles' vision because he thinks he's going to have to hang around and look after like the people that need him most.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I was wondering, too. So the next part, we see Parrish, and Parrish is doing desk work. He's answering phone calls, filing papers, doing entire, you know, reorganization of the evidence locker. And Sheriff Stilinski is sort of on his case about all of this. And finally, Parrish goes into him and is like, look, what did I do to get to lose your trust? Because I should be out there while the storm is hitting. There are down power lines. People are freaking out. There's lots of accidents and stuff. And my question is that question, too. What did Parrish do to lose Stilinski's trust? Or is it to do with the fact that we know he's, like, a supernatural creature now and Sheriff Stilinski just wants to keep an eye on him?
Well, I'm really confused because this definitely ties into, you know, Parrish's story later in the episode, like where they're talking with Melissa, and Melissa says to Sheriff, she's like, I thought you were going to keep him on death duty. So it's weird to me that, first of all, does Parrish know that the adults know about him? Like, does he know, because he definitely wakes up and is like, Scott's in trouble, we have to warn Scott, because they know Parrish is supernatural. Adults know Parrish is supernatural. Parrish knows he's supernatural. Parrish knows about Scott and his pack. Does Parrish know the parents are in on it? Because I feel like there might be a misconnection here. I feel like, you know, they're trying to protect Parrish in some way, or that they see him as a liability because of his supernatural stuff, not because he's done something wrong. But that he isn't aware that that's why, or if you know what I mean, that's kind of what it seems. But then he wakes up and later and is like, Scott's in trouble. And yeah, they all seem to know what's on the same page.
I think he knows that they know. But because of what Melissa says later on, I just have a feeling that maybe they want to keep an eye on him because they don't know what he can do yet. And maybe they're worried he'll do something like when a werewolf isn't in control of the shift, you know, just kind of go crazy. And maybe they're like, okay, well, what will trigger him to go crazy and to, you know, not wolf out because he's not a werewolf, but do whatever it is he does. And they could just be worried about that.
Yeah, and maybe it's that. Maybe it's just, like, maybe Parrish said that, taking the same thing to an account. Like, what have I done to show that I'm untrustworthy, even mm-hmm. if I'm a supernatural creature? But I don't know, that really confused me as well. Like, why Stilinski was benching him, basically, and who knew what. Yeah, that was a little bit weird to me.
Yeah. Well, luckily, Sher Stilinski does send him out into the field. There's a noise complaint, and he sends him out to do it, but Parrish is attacked. He starts trying to break somebody out of this wall that he thinks somebody's behind, and then somebody comes through the wall, grabs him by the neck, and we meet this sort of new creature who's the villain.
Rave Wolf.
Yeah, the villain of the episode. And it seems that he can actually take powers, at least temporarily, with his giant Rave Wolf glowing claws.
Glow stick claws.
Yeah, that was a little silly, not gonna lie. But definitely interested in the fact that he can take other creatures' powers. And he specifically said, oh, you're not a werewolf, you're something else, and now I am too. And I thought that was really interesting.
So he's like, what is he like? There's something that can do, there's something else that can do that. Or someone else. Oh, heroes, yeah. In Heroes, Scylla, he eats people's brains, or something. Apparently it was never confirmed whether he ate the brains or not. He messes with people's brains, and then he can absorb their hero's mutant power, and he can do any of the ones in his repertoire, basically. But, yeah, I was not so much a fan of the glow stick claws, but he's definitely sort of looks like very strange. Like, he looks like a traditional werewolf man, if you know what I mean, like a... you know, a beta werewolf, a not very nice one, given that his eyes are blue. But he's a big guy, covered in that black oil stuff, like kind of weirdly stained, with that. And yeah, he has those giant wolf, like glow stick claws, which, yeah, I don't know how any of this works. You know, they seem to be not quite something that would occur naturally.
Yeah, that's what I was just gonna say, because he only has it on one hand, and his hand is like slightly larger on that side as well. It's not just the claws. So I'm like, did they cut off his hand and put something else in its place or something? Like, because obviously,
like,
you see
hand.
Yeah, by the end of the episode, the doctors are involved with him and he's working for them. And I just feel like they did, this was, you know, the beginning of many experiments that we'll see.
Nice. Great. Cool. Sounds good.
But the other cool thing is that the Rave Wolf is looking for Scott, but Parrish doesn't give him up, even though, you know, he says he's going to kill him. So that was
and then
nice.
And then he does. He rips Parrish's chest apart, and we're like, oh my god, are you dead? Is this it? Is this the end of Parrish?
Yeah, I would have been so sad.
I almost suspected that it was. Like, I was kind of like, I know that we've had, like, many spoilers about him, you know, having a plot or something this season, but I thought maybe it was a red herring and that this was it. He was gone now, and we were going to be getting the idea of how bad the villains were. So, yeah. Basically, back in Scott and Styles' world, which doesn't have a rave wolf in it yet, there's a big storm, or a storm starts when lightning starts striking in random places. Phone reception for everyone is going out, and the Jeep also dies, so it seems that something is messing with, like, the electromagnetic fields in the air, and immediately, like, I'm like, oh my god, is Kira having a hissy fit somewhere? But it was not Kira causing this, as far as we know. It was, yeah, so lightning striking around the places, Liam trying to be like, they get out and try and fix the Jeep, the boys, the adult boys, Scott and Styles. Liam sees the lightning striking and is like, guys, and they're like, shut up, mummy and daddy are fighting and stuff, and it's, you know, but they don't listen to Liam, but they should have, because then lightning almost hits them as well. But then it seems to reset the Jeep as well without doing anything. Definitely something weird with electromagnetic forces in the air going on. Why? Who knows? Maybe it's like one of those old science things where like someone's cranking a generator and pulling lightning out of the sky and to their big like tower and they're like, ha, 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 like Frankenstein's like type thing. So I don't know. I just liked Liam and I liked Scott and Styles trying to fix the Jeep with duct tape.
Yeah, I loved how Scott was like, just stay in the car, Liam. Like, it was such a father to his little boy kind of scene. Yeah. And it was amazing. And Liam was just like, okay. Like, he was just sitting there and he's like, I'm really afraid, but Dad said stay here, so I know I'm going to be safe.
Oh, that's so cute. Yeah.
So, another interesting thing going on is Malia is still with Mr. Tate, her father, her adopted father. Dad. Yeah, it's not like he didn't adopt her. He has no idea still that he's not her father.
No, I think he does.
Does he?
I think they know she's adopted. I think he knows she's adopted. He's got to, because it's, like... He would have known his wife wasn't pregnant, like, she had an adopted mother and father, neither of which gave birth to her, so they clearly know she's adopted.
Okay, they just never told her that.
Unless someone did some weird mind stuff on her, on them, and like, they put the baby with her, and... Maybe a Talia Hale can do that kind of thing. Like, you know, she messed with Peter's mind about the baby, and maybe she messed with the parents' mind. Regardless, perhaps Malia didn't know, but I'm sure the parents must have known.
Okay, fair enough. I didn't think that all the way through, but fair enough. Anyway, the interesting thing here is Malia pretty much picks up this giant fallen tree with one hand, and I'm thinking that was probably not the best idea considering all the humans that are surrounding her, and she's just like, strong legs, and I'm like, yeah, no, that doesn't fly.
I loved this scene so much for so many reasons. I don't know, I just... Number one, Bear Trap Dad. Though when we first met Bear Trap Dad, he was like crazy with the dog and all the guns. We were like, not a fan of Bear Trap Dad. But then it sort of got into this whole thing about like, well, does she still consider him her family? Like, even though she knows she's adopted and all of that kind of stuff, and what the narrative was kind of saying about adopted families and Malia's arc in this episode, like the fact that we get to see her with Bear Trap Dad and then what happens later. You know, given that we know, you know, she found out, like, that Peter was her, you know, biological father and all of that, and not being the biggest fan of him, we find out, basically, that she's like, no, this guy's still my dad, no matter what, basically, which was really important for kind of the adopted child narrative in general, and we weren't quite sure last season how Malia felt about that, and now we sort of know, and I feel really good about that, basically.
Yeah. The other side of her story, too, is that she's wondering if she passed summer school. She had to go to summer school because her test scores weren't that great. She has no idea if she's going to be a senior yet. And with all the power going out and everything, she's waiting on an email and it's just not coming through. So I thought that was nice that they addressed the fact that she's still struggling in school and that she had to go to summer school just for, like, consistency's sake.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's good, because we were kind of never really expecting her to be like to catch up with school that fast, and we had all of that discussion last season about how the schooling system treats people who have come into, like, that they just want to push them out at their correct age range and not really worry about anything else, but how over her head she, you know, deep in that she must be. But it seems like that was definitely a thing, but that she has done a lot of work to try and catch up. The next thing that happens is basically Karen's quote from the beginning of the episode, which was Melissa coming home, talking to Scott while he's not there, and then... leaving again to go back to work because of accidents happening on the highway. But we find out that Rave Wolf was in the house at the time, basically, like, he witnesses her doing everything. He witnesses her finding the note saying that Scott's going to be out till like 1:30 in the morning at this senior thing. And sort of that gives him a clue of where to find Scott. So basically, he's gone from attacking Parrish to finding out where Scott lives, which is a pretty quick transition. But he now knows where Scott is. And the big question is, did Melissa know that he was there? And I mean, I don't think that she did, but he was literally right there. Like, I don't know what was going on there.
The look she had on her face when she sort of paused and then she was like, oh, that's right, everyone's at the school, seemed sort of forced to me in the way that she was like, you know, oh, yes, this is what's going on. I need to leave now. Goodbye, empty house. And she just left kind of in a hurry. And it made me feel like she knew he was there. But honestly, I don't think that she did know. Otherwise, she would have warned Scott, like,
She wouldn't have sent him to Scott. Yeah, I don't think that she did. I think that she, and I think it was just meant to be that she was so distracted by what she was doing because she was in such a weird hurry. She didn't have time to notice him, basically.
Yeah. Kira, meanwhile, is stuck in traffic coming home from the airport from New York City with her parents. And, you know, her phone's out. She needs to go to the senior scribe thing. She's not telling her parents what's going on. And she's looking at her phone trying to find service. And she kind of looks over and Theo is there, the newcomer Theo. And he's like, yeah, I can't get any service either. And he smiles at her and she kind of gives him a little smile. And basically, I just don't trust him at all. I know I said that last time, but I don't like him.
Theo, Karen, the romantic music swelled when they saw each other.
No, and it's not allowed.
I know it's not allowed, but it happened. And I was just like, oh. Is Theo, and we all already know that Styles also isn't a fan. It's like, is Theo just coming in to steal everyone's girl? Like, he's stealing Styles' man, he's stealing Scott's girl. Like, is he going to just pull Scott out? Maybe he's going to, like, I don't know. It's weird. Like, I don't know what he wants or why he wants it, but he's making sexy eyes at everyone. That moment between him and Kira was meant to be a moment of, like, ooh, I'm attracted from one end or the other. Hopefully not too much, but I felt, like, really weird about it. It was strange. And, I still love the Yukimura parents so much.
They're great.
Yeah. It was weird, the Theo moment. Yes, he was all charming, and he was all like, I can't get cell signal either. But it was just the music cue, and I was like, really? Like, what is happening here? Are you going to come in, and are you trying to maybe you're going to fall in love with Kira and you're going to, like, try and take Scott for everything he's got. You're going to kill Scott and take his power and his girl or something, but sure. I don't know.
Good luck with that.
So, basically, they take Scott, they take a detour to the hospital, and I'm kind of like, why at first? And then I realize they're leaving Liam there to be looked after by his dad, his stepdad who works at the hospital, and while they go to the senior thing, and he's dropping off Liam. Scott drops off Liam, and he has a beautiful alpha dad moment where he, you know, calls Liam out on his claw hands, and basically Liam's like, I suck, and Scott's like, no, you're great, you're just learning, and you're going to be really big and strong and hot and sexy and all of those kind of things, you know, normal dad stuff. It's really, you know, a really nice moment. As I said, I really like their chemistry. But yeah, how did you feel about that sort of Scott dad moment?
Oh my god, I love it so much. And I know Brooke, if she were here, she would talk about this at length because she is so into this, like, hot alpha dad Scott. So am I, though, because I just love his confidence, his easygoing air. He doesn't have to, you know, scare Liam in order to keep him in line. It's just a few encouraging words, and he feels totally safe leaving him at the hospital. And I think his confidence in Liam does a lot more for Liam than anything else would. I mean, if Liam can be like, okay, Scott trusts me, first of all, I don't want to let Scott down. But secondly, if Scott trusts me, that must mean something. That means I can do this. And, but, you know, on the flip side of that, Liam just being so worried and so insecure and so like, oh, I don't know what to do. It's just, oh, it's adorable. I really like their relationship.
Yeah, and he mentions Derek as well, which is nice. And it's just, it's really good. And it's, yeah, he just has, yeah, Scott, he just has this quiet confidence that I almost can't imagine coming out of Tyler Posey because he's so hyperactive, if you know what I mean. I'm like, he really turns something on that I just would never, like, I don't know, like, I it's so the character. It's so absolutely,
yes. You know what?
Like that. Yeah.
I actually thought about that several times during this episode, especially the part when he's sitting on the Jeep and he's sort of looking at the moon and he's very contemplative and introspective. And I'm just like, that is Scott McCall. That is not Tyler Posey. And nothing against Posey because he's a wonderful human being, but Scott has a different air about him, and the way that Posey can just turn that on and really make you see Scott and not him, which I can't always do with certain actors if I've watched them a lot, is just incredible.
Yeah, it's really, I thought it quite a few times as well, actually. But yeah, I love Hot Dominatrix Dad Scott. but then he also, they drop off Liam and he goes upstairs and meets Styles and you know, Styles is like, where's Kira? What's going on? And they have the conversation that I mentioned at the start, which is, you know, he's like, I don't know. She only texted me once this week. I don't know how we left things when, you know, when she went to New York for vacation. And he said, you know, Styles asked how he left it. And Scott says, good, I think. I said to her not to worry about anything and to go have fun. And Styles was immediately like, are you serious? Uh-uh. And, yeah, I guess, as I said, I immediately was, like, facepalm in the same way because I think that that phrasing, that specific phrasing does have an implication of, like, oh, this isn't on. This relationship isn't on while you're away, basically. But, you know, you probably should have specified exactly what you meant. And clearly Scott did not mean that. How did you interpret it, Karen?
Probably the same way Scott did initially, very innocent, very go have fun in New York type of thing. I definitely would have been worried if my girlfriend or boyfriend only texted me once an entire week while they were away. But yeah, I mean, I probably would have said the same thing and not really known it had this ulterior meeting. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Poor Scott.
I found that hilarious. Really funny, obviously. And, I mean, what might he might have just meant, like, don't worry, as in, like, you don't have to, like, write me 2,000 world emails every day. Like, we're all good. Like, I'll see you when you get back. Mm-hmm. Have a fun time. Don't be stressing about, like, you know, looking after me, you know, or something like that. Like, you don't have to be in constant contact with me. It doesn't necessarily mean go sleep with other guys, which I don't know how Kira would orchestrate that anyway. She seemed to struggle getting into one relationship. Like, I don't know how a few weeks in New York is going to find her a whole bunch of, like, Tinder matches or something. But, you know, it seems unlikely. But it clearly, to people who think a little differently, it means something else. And I just found that very funny.
Oh, my God. Now I'm thinking of their, like, OkCupid profiles and Kira being, like, must love foxes or something.
Oh, no.
Anyway, now we switch back over to the adults. We see Sheriff Stilinski in the sheriff's station, and this kid comes in. He's getting arrested. He's sort of being strong-armed by a couple of deputies, and we learn that his name is Donovan, which is one of the new characters we heard about when we did our Season 5 news roundup. And Sheriff Stilinski sort of goes like, okay, what's he in for? And it was breaking and entering, and he had a loaded gun on him. And Sheriff looks really disappointed, but he's like, you knew if you put another toe out of line that it was going to be jail time, book him. And the kid just starts freaking out, and he keeps saying, you're dead, and all this other stuff.
Yeah, I'm like, really shocked.
Yeah, well, I'm like foreshadowing. Let's not, because this seems like a plot a B plot to me. Like, it's going to be something that's going to be away from the doctors, but also very significant. And if Sheriff gets his own B plot this season or over a couple of episodes, you know, it could have some sort of significant meaning, and it could end up tying into some other stuff. But yeah, just this random insertion of this little scene in the middle of the episode makes me really nervous.
Well, yeah, I was just really subtle because it started off being something I kind of understood, like, quite realistically. Like, small town, you kind of know the troublemakers, and if, you know, especially if there's a young kid and they keep doing stuff, you know, a good police do actually take quite a lot of time to try and, like, you know, mentor these kids or be like, you know, maybe don't do that. And, like he seemed really upset. Like, Sheriff seemed really upset that this kid was, like, messing up again, and that he was like, you know, you remember what the judge, like, he's clearly been there for this kid's whole, you know, crime ridden career, if you know what I mean. And he seems really upset by it, and I kind of expect Sheriff, you know, I kind of expected the kid to be like, no, please, Sheriff, no, like, but he turns to this crazy I'm gonna kill you anger, and I was just like, oh, all right, this is unpleasant. So, yeah, I'm really curious about what that's going to be. But again, when they said the name, like, Donovan, I was like, oh, yeah, that's, like, a person who was, like, introduced in a press release. So this is going to be somewhat significant, possibly, in a worrying way.
Yeah.
The storm starts, basically, you know, raining, can't do anything, traffic jam. And they get the reports at the hospital from the traffic jam on the highway that she's on, because that's what Melissa's being called back into work because of. And Scott is like, no, don't worry, I can get her, I can go and get her. And he's going to go on his motorcycle, his moped, and get her. And I was really glad, FYI, that it was the moped and not that he was going to, like, run like a werewolf through the, like, and, like, carry her on his back. I'm like, okay, 50-50, normal teenager, going to ride your motorcycle, like, weaving through the traffic, because I've done, my brother has a motor scooter and does the same thing all the time. Or it was going to be like, you're going to gallop like a werewolf and then, like, take her out, and then you're going to gallop through the forest like a werewolf with her on her back. And I was so glad it was the motorcycle. But anyway, the point is, he goes home to get his helmet and his bike. And at home, he finds that the clock is kind of going crazy, and then the magnets are going crazy off the fridge. Like, the, again, electromagnetic force must stop existing or something, because I'm pretty sure there's some of that in a clock as well. And then it seems like there's an earthquake in the house, like, stuff's knocking over and it's breaking and everything's really, going really crazy. And I don't know if it's just localized to his house or if it's, like, sort of in the whole area. And then it all stops and the magnets jump back onto the fridge, and he finds the, his own note that Rave Wolf, poked some holes in, and he's kind of like, what the hell is this, basically? But still goes off to get Kira. So, any theories about the localized earthquake in Casa McCall?
gosh, no. The only thing that I can think of is that it's got to have something to do with the lightning and all of that. And I don't know if this is going to tie into what we'll talk about in a little bit regarding the story that the Yukimuras tell Kira. But it's just crazy that the magnets fell off and then jumped back on. I mean, something is definitely going on here that's supernatural, but
I tried to look up what makes a magnet stop working, if you know what I mean. Like, what makes a magnet lose its charge or repel? I didn't get an answer that was quite useful, but I'm going to keep looking. yeah, I don't know. It's really weird. And there was that scene that was in the trailer of the clock kind of freaking out, and I don't know if that means that there's going to be, like, stuff to do with time, or if it's literally to do with, like, the mechanics stopping working in the same way that the Jeep stops working.
Because the way that the magnets, like, even if the magnets got their magnetism back, they wouldn't jump from the floor back onto the fridge, you know? So I'm thinking, like, did time like
loop?
Yeah, did it just go back in time for a second? And I don't know. It's crazy. I kind of hope so, because I think that would make it really interesting and hard to figure out where the season's going, but also very complicated. So I don't know. Luckily, though, we do find out soon after that Parrish is still alive. So he definitely did not die. And he sees Lydia. And Lydia sort of puts her hand on his chest, and she almost kisses him, which I'm sure all the Lydia Parrish shippers were very, very happy about.
She calls him Jordan, his name, his first name.
So, I was very happy about this. But, okay, this is my question. Is this like a kiss of death? Because she's a banshee, she has a lot to do with death. Was she... was her image, because I don't think it was actually her, was her image, you know, there to lead him on to the next world, or what?
I don't know. Like, that's, I didn't think about that until you wrote it, and I was like, oh, great, when you did. So I just thought it was like he was hallucinating. Maybe they developed a thing in the part, maybe they were already dating, and he was like, you know, oh, I'm upset, but I want my baby Lydia to comfort me, and here she is. But now I'm like, maybe the banshees act as like the bringer of death to their own loved ones, if you know what I mean, like that they kind of take them to death, or maybe she was trying to save him, maybe she's projecting her consciousness. I don't know. I think that the whole, like, you know, appearing as the image of death, and yes, you're going to die, and here I am to comfort you in your death, is actually a really good theory. That I didn't think about, but now I'm quite upset. So thanks for that.
You are very welcome. And the thing is, I don't think she knew she was doing it, because the only time we see her in the present day is at the end of the episode, and she didn't seem concerned about anything. So
yeah,
I feel like...
No, I don't think it was her in that moment, you know, actually sending her consciousness. It was either his own hallucination or something timey-wimey and weird in terms of her consciousness. Or her banshee spirit going and ferrying the dead. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, Stilinski shows up, and Lydia doesn't get a chance to kiss Parrish, and so presumably, you know, everything's fine. And
it's not like Stilinski's like, Lydia, what are you doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, she wasn't really there.
Mm-hmm. She sort of fades away, and he shows up, and he takes Parrish to Melissa, and Parrish is healed now, and he's been sort of smoking out of his chest, which was interesting. Definitely, like, gives into the theory that he has something to do with fire still. And he's healed. He's completely healed, and he wakes up, and he tells them that Rave Wolf can steal powers. And he's really concerned that he's even going to steal Scott's powers, which traditionally cannot be stolen because he's a true wolf, or true alpha.
Yeah, and I mean, this was the scene that caused a bit more confusion with me. Like, you know, him kind of waking up with his glowing eyes and Stilinski pointing the gun at him. I think that the desk duty thing and all of that, I think that they know, but that Stilinski... does not trust him as a supernatural creature for some reason, like that he thinks he's a liability or dangerous. And either Parrish is like, excuse me, I'm not dangerous, or he doesn't know that Stilinski knows this. And then he's like, excuse me, why, what have I done wrong as an employee? It's one of those two options, I'm sure. But Melissa seems to know everything. They seem to have had conversations about this before, about kind of looking after Parrish, either protecting Parrish or protecting people from him. And they're, like, secretly trying to heal him in the morgue. But, yeah, I don't know. It's unpleasant regardless. And, yeah, Stilinski seems a bit unhappy with him, which is not my favorite thing. I'm sad about that.
Yeah, I am too. I don't like... I didn't really like the way that Stilinski was acting in the beginning of the episode with Parrish, and maybe it's because there's that disconnect for us where we're not entirely sure what's going on yet in terms of, like... if he had done anything, or, you know, Stilinski hasn't aired his
He wasn't
voices.
Running around naked as a dog boy, you know,
exactly.
Like, as far as we know.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Maybe it's because he did that, like, killed that other deputy, or that other deputy kind of, he didn't kill him, but, you know, the stuff where he got on fire, the other deputy tried to kill him, and then he caught on fire, and then everything went crazy.
Yeah. Either
when
way,
he came it's, in his underwear.
It's disappointing to see Sheriff Stilinski being so guarded.
Yeah,
I don't like that.
Story time with the Yukimuras, basically, because Mr. Yukimura can't, like, not make things into a teaching moment, apparently. They're stuck in the storm, traffic jam estimated to take about 3 hours to clear, and, you know, the parents start talking about how this reminds them of legend, of the Wild Hunt, which is a group of ghost riders who travel through storm clouds to collect souls. I've heard a few different versions of the Wild Hunt, but to be fair, the first version of it I ever heard was in the Narnia books, and that was probably not as evil as this, and probably more to do with Jesus, or something. But yeah, how did you feel about that? Did you think that that was just a story we're getting told, or do you think that that was like some kind of hint?
Oh, it was definitely not just a story we were being told.
I don't know. It seemed a bit obvious to be a hint. Like,
I wonder if it's not going to be as straightforward as that, as, you know, like, there really isn't going to be spirits in the sky chasing after souls, but maybe there's more of a, like, modern version or actual version rather than, like, a folklore version that we'll be seeing. Mm-hmm. Either way, I really like this idea. I like the idea of seeing spirits and souls and that sort of thing might allow other people to come back, like Aiden, who has already come back, although that could just be a hallucination, we're not entirely sure yet, could also allow somebody like Allison to pop up momentarily. So I'm definitely not hating this idea.
Yeah. There's a lot of different takes on the legend from folklore and all that kind of thing. And so we can definitely look into that more deeply. And in some of the legends, it's like the leader of the Wild Hunt is King Arthur, which is very exciting to me because I like those kind of Arthurian legends, but it doesn't necessarily make a ton of sense for Teen Wolf, but never mind. There's a lot of different interpretations. So yeah, if it is something about like the dead, like, you know, a lost dead souls riding again, like that could be interesting. And yeah, I think, you know, it sounds like a rollicking good time, really, the Wild Hunt. I mean, who wouldn't want to ride through the skies on a storm cloud horse and collect some dead souls? Like, I mean, yeah, cool.
Sure. I do that on weekends. So one of my favorite parts in the episode actually was when all of a sudden in the distance we hear Scott's motorcycle and Kira just perks up, runs out of the car, it's pouring rain, runs past Theo who looks at her and, you know, I'm just like, haha, sucker. And Scott and Kira meet and they stop right in front of each other and they don't touch at first. And they're just kind of smiling and looking goofy and Scott's just like, did you have fun in New York? And she goes, not really. And he goes, good. And then they kiss. And I'm just like, yes, this is the awkward relationship that I really love about them. And I love that it was like, I didn't have any fun at all away from you. And it was just, it was very romantic.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, it was very cute. And I don't think Kira would have necessarily interpreted it the way that, you know, Styles and Malia did either. But maybe she thought Scott meant that, but she didn't want to. I don't know. It's all very stupid. But regardless, they're back together and they're very cute. So
yes,
that's nice. And then they ride off on the moped into the stormy, stormy sunset. So Malia and Styles are already at the school while Scott's fetching Kira. And Malia kind of smells the anxiety on Styles, though, to be fair, I don't know, like he says, I don't know how she differentiates it because it should be there all the time. And basically she kind of gets him to explain, you know, the worry about all not being best friends forever after high school, because he asked his dad and apparently his dad's not in contact with anyone who he was at school with, still, like, his best friends when he was at school, and, like, they're not in touch anymore, they faded out, and Styles is absolutely paranoid about that happening to him, and that's why he has this great vision of them basically all being together after high school in college, and it all starts tonight, that he wanted them to all be there to have this senior year tradition together. And, yeah, I mean, I feel like I've talked about this a lot on Glee Chat, like, because so much of that show was about, like, leaving high school. It was, like, three seasons worth of, like, leaving high school, basically. I feel like I've talked about this a lot, about the idea of, like, the high school relationships and whether they, you know, are the kind of ones that would last forever or what makes that circumstance, because some people are friends with their, like, their childhood friends forever and some people aren't, and it really just, I don't know why that happens with some people, or, you know, maybe it's, I think for some people, maybe there the people that they hang out with in school, it's just like the best fit in that circumstance, but it isn't necessarily the best fit forever, whereas other people can find people who are actually really solid regardless of what age you met them at or what circumstance. I know that a lot of my high school friends, it was kind of just making the best of a bad situation. Like, these are the people that are around here, and yes, we were very close, but like, I don't think that I would get along with them at all now. So, and then other people are totally different. But I guess that worry about him not being all best friends forever, if he's saying, like, you know, I've already found the best people in my life, why wouldn't I want to keep that? Like, do you think that that's a realistic idea, like, either for them specifically or just in general? Or do you think that Styles might meet a whole gang of new people he likes even more than Scott McCall?
I think if we're just talking about a general non-Teen Wolf situation, I think that it's totally realistic to expect to meet people that you like even better outside of high school. Although, like, my best friend and I have been friends for years and years and years all through high school. We did go to college together. Now I'm, you know, we're both moving away, but I don't expect that relationship to change at all, because we just have the sort of friendship that is... it's always going to be there. We've gone through a lot together, and I don't see that changing. But for a lot of people, when you go off to college, you really come into your own. You don't have to keep up this persona you did in high school. And I feel like you connect with the people who will understand who you really are and will accept that. Whereas in high school, it's very clicky, very like superficial, have to keep up your image kind of thing. However, this is Beacon Hills, and this is Stiles Stilinski and Scott McCall. There is no way that they're not going to be best friends for the rest of their life. And I think you can include the others in that group. Just look at everything they have gone through together. You can't just throw away a friendship like that.
Yeah, like, I'd say that they've already been through, like, the kind of stuff, like, they already know, like, who they really are to each other. Like, that it's not just, like... I think Styles is projecting the idea of, like, quote-unquote, like, normal people onto his friendship group when they already have been that kind of circumstance which is creating bonds for life. It's really not like him and Scott, because they're already in this little, like, subculture. They're already in this little, like, world that only they know about. Unless the entire world starts knowing about werewolves and stuff, unless the entire, like... they're always going to have to be each other's support system, basically, like, whether that's through choice or circumstance. They're kind of all locked together now, basically, because of what they know about the world. I think that that's as simple as it goes, basically. So I think that Styles' fears are sort of unrealistic, basically.
Yeah, agreed. Now, they start battling Rave Wolf. Okay, first of all, the best part of this entire battle is when Kira whips off her belt and turns it into a sword.
Yeah, that's true. I just want to say one tiny thing before we go on to Kira's sword, because I loved it, which was another favorite non-spoken moment, a non-spoken quote of the episode, was when Malia just puts Liam on the floor, FYI. It was amazing. But yeah, sword belt, also favorite unspoken quote of the episode.
Yeah.
Favorite moment. It was so good.
Oh my God.
Where did she get that? Did she make it? Like, how is that a thing? I mean, I was like...
You'd have to make something like that. Maybe her mom made it, because I feel like her mom's like, look, I'm not letting you go unprepared. Here's a sword belt.
I loved the sword belt a lot. It was so good. I was not expecting it. And it was just, I was just like, because I'd already seen her outfit, like with her tights and shorts and the sneakers. And I saw she was wearing like a big chunky belt, but I was not prepared for the sword. And I was just like, oh, it's so good. Yeah, anyway.
It's amazing. And I want one. Okay, so then Theo shows up and he attempts to help against the Rave Wolf. He gets a couple of good hits in, but then he basically goes flying just like everybody else. My thing is, why is he here?
Did he follow them?
Yeah, Scott and Kira.
Yeah.
Is he keeping tabs on them? Did he know the attack was coming? I mean...
he's creepy.
Yeah, he is a bit creepy. But the big thing here is that Rave Wolf tries to steal Scott's powers, But it doesn't work. And I have
to admit, he stabs Scott, and everyone's like, oh my god, Scott's gonna die. Oh my god, he's like, and then Scott's just like, no, it didn't work.
Just kidding. I have to say, I was a little worried because we did see his eyes fade, and I was like, oh my god, this is going to set up the rest of the season. Like, you know, he lost his powers. How is he going to get them back? Is this guy going to be super powerful now? But then he just looks up out of the top of his eyes, and you see they're glowing red, and I was like, yes!
And
Scott
just
McCall.
Like breaks the claws off, and he's like, nah.
Breaks the guy's arm, and yeah.
Yeah, that was gross. And then Scott Styles was just like, I want to say something graphic that I wouldn't normally say. But yeah, Styles was well into him breaking that guy's arm. and he's like, you know, you can stay here and I'll break something else, or you can run. And Scott Styles is just like, I'd run. And he's just like, oh, that was so hot. I might be overthinking that, but he was definitely impressed, and he was almost like cocky about Scott's victory, and I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I definitely did too. Now, here's my Avatar reference for the episode. Now, why don't you think this worked? Do you think it's because Scott is a true alpha and that's not something that you can steal? Or do you think it's like soul bending where your spirit has to be stronger than the other person's in order for that to work?
I don't know. I mean, Scott is definitely very Aang, I'm not going to lie. But I don't know. Like, that's... I don't know why it didn't work. It could be the true alpha thing. You know, ends up going back to those people and being like, some more power and I can do it. So it might be like a sheer power thing, like that you have to have stronger power than the other person to be able to take it, and that he doesn't have stronger power than Scott. I was also really interested in the way he spoke to Scott, like, show me the man that bested Deucalion and that brought down the Argents. Like, is Scott this like really terrifying legend to other people, like as this like really fierce, like imagine hearing like this like crazy legends about Scott that make him out to be this like really powerful, crazy warrior, like, you know, he made him sound like this violent legend basically, and then imagine meeting him and just being like, oh, right, okay.
I definitely
must be
think...
a little bit of a letdown for people like Rave Wolf.
I definitely think that tales are spreading about Scott McCall. I mean, we saw, you know, that Theo heard some stuff too, and that's why he came back to Beacon Hill. So Scott's name is definitely getting around, but I don't know if the tales are, or sort of like tall tales where people are being like, oh my god, there's this really scary true alpha and don't go near Beacon Hills, or if they're like, oh my god, this guy is werewolf Jesus.
Like, the facts are correct about what he did, but the idea that he but kind of the mental image that builds of that person, if you know what I mean? Like, you know, you have all the facts are correct, but it's built the incorrect mental image of what that person is, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to me about Scott. Theo basically reveals himself, you know, after he turns back from his beta status. He still has gold eyes, which is like a good sign. He's not a murderer, at least.
Yes.
You know, that's at least something we don't have to be too panicked about. Apparently he's a friend from fourth grade and he knew both of the boys. So that's something interesting because all of the press release was like, he knew Scott, and people were like, what's the timing? Was he friends with Scott before? So he knew Styles, because that doesn't make any sense because they've known each other so long. No, he knew both of the boys. He kind of addresses both of them. He was around, I guess he was their friend or he knew them in the fourth grade. Maybe Scott had a year of like being too cool, like he joined the cool group or something, and Styles was like, maybe him and Styles broke up for a year and he was like friends with other people, and then that's why Styles doesn't like him or something. Anyway, Styles is suspicious of this guy immediately. Scott isn't. Styles thinks it's weird that he's come back after, you know, after all this time, just out of, you know, coincidentally, and then all of that kind of stuff. Theo outright says that he's a werewolf too. He heard about Scott he has come back to Beacon Hills. Like, what, did he convince his whole family to move back? Or, like, did he move away without his family? Like, what the hell? But regardless, he's come back to Beacon Hills specifically to join Scott's pack. It's not, he's not pretending it's some sort of happy coincidence. But Styles still doesn't trust his motives in wanting to be around Scott, basically. I take it you agree?
Always trust Styles. Have we learned nothing from the last four seasons?
But it may, what if it's playing into Styles' insecurity? Like, oh, I've had Scott all these years, but now Scott's leaving high school and he's met this other werewolf buddy and maybe they'll be best friends instead. Like, you know,
this he might be repetitive of Isaac's storyline, though. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, okay, like, unbiased, not joking anymore. I still don't trust Theo just because we know he's a lone wolf and that is not always a good thing. And the fact that he came to Scott of all people, yes, Scott is this really powerful werewolf, but what makes him think he can get in with his pack? Like, I just feel like to introduce this character so early on and to kind of give him this sort of shady, we're not really sure where his loyalties lie type of thing, just doesn't sit well with me.
Yeah, I don't know. On one hand, you could totally play it the sympathetic way. You could be like, oh, he was bitten, he was ditched, he had to figure out everything himself. You know, he's had no one his whole life, not through any fault of his own. He was just like in a random attack and he's never been part of a pack, never learned about being well. Then he heard that this kid that he used to really like and trust not only is like has got a pack, but he's like a true alpha. Oh my God, maybe he'll be able to help me. But he certainly doesn't come across as that innocent. Like, if he had no other wolves around him, how did he know about the true alpha? And like, how does he know about like the werewolf, you know, like community's secrets and stuff like that? So I don't know. It's confusing.
So we get to the point of the whole episode in terms of why they keep saying, oh, we're going to the high school, we're going to the high school. It's Senior Scribe. And at this point, we're still not entirely sure what it is, but they head over to the high school.
I was going to say, is this a thing? Or like,
I've never heard of it before.
Maybe it was a thing Jeff's high school did or something.
Yeah, maybe.
Try and find out.
But we do see that Lydia is there and she's not in Eichen House, so I think that's our, you know, major clue that there
she's
is a little
like,
bit
guys, where have you been?
Yeah, time jump and nothing seems out of place. She's just sort of hanging out there. So she missed all the action. And we also find out that Malia is officially a senior, which is a relief. And I have to say, I really like how she hugged Kira and even like Kira put her arm around Lydia, and I just want to reiterate, I love the way the girls are friends and that there's no cattiness there, no jealousy, and it's all very comfortable. I think that's just a really nice change.
Yeah.
So Senior Scribe is when you sneak into the library, take all the books off the shelves, and put your initials on the shelves. And like I said, I've never heard of this before. I kind of like the idea, though. It's kind of a cool tradition. Not technically.
At first, when I saw them taking the books off the shelf, I'm like, oh my God, are they writing in the books? I was like,
yeah,
are they writing notes in the books? And I was just like, girl, you better stop.
Because they were all yearbooks, yeah. Too. And I was like, what is going on? Lydia says it's not technically vandalism, though. So I guess we can, you know, sleep soundly. And a couple of things happen here with Senior Scribe. First of all, Styles eyes Derek's initials, which I thought was kind of a nice moment. Again,
we had some conversations about the legitimacy of this, which I actually quite enjoyed. Because there's a few theories here. Number one, I'll tell everyone that I cried this entire scene. And I don't mean cried at the end part. I don't mean I cried at this. I cried from the moment that they started, like, from the cut where they're looking inside the library window from the outside. I don't know why. Well, I kind of do. It's because it looks, I think I've said before, exactly like my high school library. Like, exactly those, like, that arch window with the two staircases rimming round the mezzanine. Like, it's exactly the same. And for some reason, I just got, like, weird. And then I saw what they were doing, and I was like, oh. And then Styles has his moment, like, viewing the DH initials, and it's, is that I'm not even like a crazy OTP Derek shipper, but I was kind of, I liked that they gave Styles that moment and that like him thinking about Derek as like a normal kid and stuff like that. Like, I like that. And what we were theorizing, like, about how Derek's initials got on that shelf from a previous year, if it's a new library. And a few theories. Number one theory is that the bit that got destroyed with the cannibal was just like a wing, like a downstairs. It does seem to have like a bit going off downstairs, so it could have been like a downstairs wing that got destroyed, or the school could have more than one library. Number two, that the shelves, the shelving units were salvaged. Like they put the same shelves into the new building, which is quite likely as well. Or number three, that it's not actually Derek's initials, that it's like Diana Howard, who lives two streets over from Scott or something like that, but that he saw the DH and just thought of Derek. Either way, it still gave me the same emotions. So, yeah.
I love that no matter what, it still made you cry, even if it was Diana Howard.
It's true.
Yeah. I think, like, you know, some people are going to like the fact that Styles had a moment with the initials. That's really weird to say. You know what I mean. Some people
Styles
aren't
and Derek
like
had
it.
A moment.
Yeah, yeah. I honestly didn't really think of it as, like, a Derek thing. I just thought of it as, look, you know, yes, Derek, you know, Tyler Hoechlin is not going to be a series regular, but he's going to be there throughout the series still. We got a mention of him earlier. We got his initials here. I just like the little throwbacks because things change and people come and go on Teen Wolf, and we've seen that time and time again, and we just kind of have to accept it at this point. But that doesn't mean that they still can't bring those characters to life and have them involved in one way or another. So I was really happy.
I think that it makes sense that they sort of gave the Derek moment to Styles, regardless of shipping, because he has the strongest connection with Derek out of anyone there except for Scott, and Scott has, like, some more important stuff to have a moment about, which we'll talk about. So, like, it would have been a bit weird if Kira had been like, oh, Derek's initials, I have some feelings, if you know what I mean, or even Lydia, because people would have been like, well, we meant to ship that, whereas Styles and Derek, not only do people obviously already ship it, regardless, but that he is the human being in the room with the strongest bond to Derek, aside from Scott, who has other things to have a moment about. So I think that that is kind of why they gave it to Styles, if you know what I mean. But I really liked it, regardless.
Yeah, so did I. Although, I have to say, the next two parts definitely gave me a lot more feelings than that.
I like having Inkwell crying at all of them. So, yeah, like, literally, I cried at the Derek. I started crying at the Derek thing. Like, I didn't even know what, I didn't know it was going to get worse than that, like, if you know what I mean. I was already crying at the Derek initials, so, yeah, this is my, and it happened on both times I watched the episode as well, so this is, like, I don't know why, man, but this got me.
Mine just increasingly got worse and worse, so that was fun. But Malia, she puts down M, and she sort of pauses at her next initial, and you're like, is she going to put Hale? Is she going to put Tate? And she ends up putting Tate, and she has this very proud smile on her face, mm-hmm. like, yes, this is who I am, and I am perfectly happy with that. And it was such a great moment for the character, and I thought Shelley did such a great job, like, showing us all those emotions, like the hesitation, the uncertainty, the determination, and then just the sort of, like, relaxation that comes with accepting that she's a Tate.
Yeah, I really did as well, and I think the shots on everyone, I think the shots of Styles, shots of Malia, and then Scott as well, and just the way that close-up shot, like, the face work, like, the expression work from all of them was really good, but Malia's was really, it told a whole story, like, and it was just really great. It just told everything that she's, like, you know, you got the picture of where she, what she'd been struggling with from last season and discovering stuff about Peter and stuff like that, you know, you know, the stuff that she's been clearly considering about herself, like, you just got the whole story in that moment in a really amazing way, so that was really great.
Yeah, although the one that really sent me over the edge that I was not expecting, I don't know why I wasn't expecting it, but Scott puts down his initials, and he sort of pauses, and he puts down AA, and I lost it. It was like, I can't even explain to you. Like, I've always loved Allison, and I was sad about her death, but I feel like the more we go on, and the more we see the characters reflecting on her death and how it keeps impacting them, the harder it gets for me to, like, accept that she's really gone. And especially when, you know, Lydia's like, she's still here with us, and it was just like, ugh, my heart. Why did you do that to us?
Yeah, I think that it's actually... But yeah, as I said, like, seeing her death, like, kind of, we were upset and whatever. But it's more the idea of picturing the current characters grieving, if you know what I mean. Like, picturing, it's not so much that Allison is dead, it's that they're living with Allison being dead and how that must realistically feel, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. And I was wondering, too, like, obviously, Kira, like, Scott steps back and puts his arm around Kira, and she sort of tucks herself into his side. And I'm like, that must still be kind of awkward for them. I mean, clearly.
Girlfriend.
Yeah, and I think they've sort of accepted it, and I'm sure they've talked about it and everything, but there's always going to be this little bit of, like, he's still thinking about her kind of thing. And I think you have to accept that and believe that's just how it's going to be. But I'd like to know a little bit more about how Kira feels about that situation.
Yeah, I mean, she seems okay with it. But, yeah, it is a bit weird, I suppose. Like, you know, them saying, you know, she would have been here with us. It's like, what, she would have been here with... If she'd been there, would Kira not be there? Or would it be like her and Isaac would be another couple writing their initials in the shelf, or what, like, you know? And it's weird, I don't know. And but it was miserably sad. Yeah, so after that moment, which I thought was sort of going to be the end of the episode, we actually get the repercussion of Rave Wolf's adventures, which is where he is back at the lab, I guess. He's begging, he's saying, I failed, I need some more power, and then out of the kind of shadows come these twitchy, blurry steampunk doctors, as we've already kind of discussed in the roundup episode. So they're there, and they kind of sound not really human. They have some weird noises going on. And the guy, we kind of see that they have some people in big, like, tubes. And it definitely looks like an old-school experimentation lab, which definitely... ties into my theory about the Frankenstein, you know, Dr. Frankenstein pulling in the, harnessing the power of an electrical storm to power his machines, if you know what I mean. So it's definitely got a vibe going on. And this guy, and Rave Wolf saying, couldn't do it, amp me up with some more power and I can. And they're like, no second chance, or whatever it is that they're saying. And basically they kill him. And crows erupt out of his chest, which is really charming. The episode also opens with a crow flying in and sitting on the fence of Eichen House and making some noises. Ravens or crows, whatever they are, there's probably a pretty specific difference if we're dealing with a legend, but at the moment, I don't know. And as we talked about last week with all of the bird up drama, yeah, how are you feeling about the crow moment, I suppose?
It was definitely weird, and I don't really know what that means. Was the guy, like, not really alive? Did they put the crows in him so they could control him? I have no idea. But I think what freaked me out more was that the doctors sound like insects. Like, they had this weird sort of chittering sound to them, and it was really creepy and gross sounding, and the way that they blurred, and the way that they moved, they seem terrifying, and I would like to figure out what they are as soon as possible.
Yeah, they're horrible, is what they are. I don't know, do you think that they're actually alive, or that they're like crazy robot, like clockwork robots or something?
My initial thought was that they were clockwork, because I think that freaks me out more than if they were human. But I kind of like the idea that maybe they're not quite alive, that they've been pieced together and they've got all these machines keeping them running. Oh, sort of like in, is it Hellboy?
Oh, no, I don't know.
In Hellboy.
I know the theory that you're talking about. Like, I've seen it. Yeah. Few things where that kind of thing happens, yeah,
and there's just nothing in there. It's just all, you know, metal and clockwork and all this kind of stuff, and I think that would be so creepy.
Yeah, no thanks. So, yeah, that happens, basically, which is, you know, introducing at least one of the antagonists for this season, and they're clearly working on experimentation of some kind, given that they have someone inside the tube. So, yeah. What do you think that they might have wanted with Scott?
I don't know. Maybe they need that power to put it into something else, to take over the world. Maybe they're, like, collecting all these different powers to, like, make a super villain or something.
Cool. Alright, that sounds fun.
Okay, so at the end of the episode, after we get all this craziness, we jump back to Lydia, who's in Eichen House. And, you know, we assume that this is sort of like in the future now. She's being interrogated by somebody, by some doctor. And we're really not sure who he is. I was thinking that he was Dr. Valak. Some of the other girls don't agree with me or just can't figure it out. So if anybody has, like, a definitive answer.
That, you know, in a couple of days that the cast, you know, the proper cast credits will be up on IMDb and we can find it out. But as we are recording this, they are not currently up, and I cannot figure out whether this is the same guy or not. I feel like it's not.
Yeah.
I feel like this guy is more jowly, and that I kind of found Dr. Valak, like, slightly attractive, except that he was being crazy, and I didn't find this guy attractive at all. So, I don't know. And Dr. Valak was a patient, not, a staff member. Did he break out and take over the place himself? Like, I don't know if Dr. Valak had bad intentions or not, or if he was just weird. There's this guy.
Absolutely thought he had bad intentions, because when Deaton met with him at the end of season 4, it was very much a, like, be super careful of this person. So, and we know that he can sort of get inside people's heads with his third eye, and also,
I did not have a third eye, but I don't know if he can, like, close that up at will, if you know what I mean.
Or if it was a figment of Lydia's imagination, because he does bring out the trepanation drill. So he did that to himself, Valak did. And if he got inside of Lydia's head, you know, that could explain why she's hallucinating about Aiden. It could explain quite a few different things, but, you know, I mean, we're just really not sure.
Did you think that he was going to use that drill on her or on himself?
On her.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well, but that's gross. But yeah, so, and then she has, he's kind of being like, when did all this start? What started happening? Do you remember what happened? It all started at the start of your senior year. So we're kind of figuring that this is, you know, in the future. But she then sees those flashbacks moments happening to the characters, which may or may not be true things that come to play in their story.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm like. Are these things that have happened in, like, this timeline?
Sure.
But if something,
like,
can change?
Yeah.
But we see the first, we'll just go through each of the flashes. But the first one is Liam and Scott roaring. And I was wondering, are they roaring at each other?
I felt like it was confrontational. I don't know. They could have been going up against the same thing, but I feel like that they was at each other. I feel like it was a confrontation or a fight.
Yeah. And that would kind of go in line with what we've seen with the other flashes, because we also see Melissa slapping Sheriff Stilinski,
yeah.
Which I hated.
Oh,
I hated seeing that.
Just what could have caused that? Like, what in a million years could have caused that?
Exactly. And then Kira looks like she's leaving, and Scott's sort of just standing in the middle of the road looking after her. We see Parrish surrounded by flames, which honestly, like, wasn't that shocking to me, because we've seen that before.
He's all covered in ash again, like he got all burnt up again. But
yeah.
Yeah.
And Malia is being cornered by the desert wolf. And I guess what's most surprising in that scene is that she's cowering. She's really scared. And she's not trying to fight back, which doesn't seem like Malia to me, so
and
I feel like something...
Her mother, like, why would it, like, allegedly, like, why would her mother be, anyway, who knows?
Yeah, so I'm really worried about who the desert wolf is. And then lastly, we see Styles flipped over inside his Jeep, which we actually saw in the trailer, so I feel like this wasn't a big surprise either. Like, I've kind of come to terms with it and hoping that, you know, everything's going to be fine. But my question here is, He's surrounded by flames too, and I kind of wonder if Parrish's flames and Styles's flames are the same, and if maybe like Parrish was in the car with him, if he caused the accident, not on purpose, but if he just happened to be there or something like that, it could be connected.
Yeah, oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's all very stressful, isn't it? You know, no one's having a nice glimpse of the future, no. Is that everything? Did we want to talk about in the what's coming up for next week? Or not next week, the next episode? Like, I guess it's the following night. That's kind of the next up on Teen Wolf. Do you think that kind of stuff was meant to be just from the next episode or like from the whole season?
I'm not sure, because sometimes they do that like whole season kind of thing, or maybe like the next several episodes. I don't really know.
Yeah, because there were some interesting moments definitely about Theo in there and you know, the whole trusting issue and everything else, Liam and Mason. So anything stand out to you strongly there?
Basically just Theo being like, you should trust me, and Styles being like, you should not trust him. And also Mason too, I would say. I can't wait for him to be in the fold.
I was interested in that last cut where, you know, Stilinski was clearly talking about, like, you know, crime moments or, like, troublemaker moments. And he was saying something like, the thing is that they, you know, they always slip up or they always make a mistake or something like that. And that's when you catch them. And it's kind of transposed over, I believe it was Theo, showing, like, a hammer to some people sitting in front of him, and one of the people sitting in front of him, you only saw the edge of their hair, but it seemed like the same curly hair as that horrible nurse from the very start of the episode, if you know what I mean. So is he with Eichenhaus, like, trying to screw people up? I don't know. I'm very upset. So yeah, but I guess that we'll find that out in like 24 hours time, or you'll be listening to us do a podcast about that in a couple of days.
Yeah.
What are you left wondering about the most, I guess, for the whole season from the premiere?
Oh boy. Probably, and I've said this 100 times, but Lydia's powers. I'm just really curious how she developed them and her new abilities and everything. And the doctors. I mean, how could you not wonder what those things are made out of? So hopefully they, like, Scott and them come face to face with them sooner rather than later, which I think they will, considering they've been introduced so soon. So might take a while to take them down, but I don't like the idea of our heroes not quite knowing what's out there yet.
I'm quite curious about the birds, because we've already had stuff. Like, we had the whole flies in the person's chest, and then the Gitsune-like spirit being, like, trapped in a fly as well. And now we've got birds flying out of chests, which is a bit bigger and somewhat worse. But, yeah, I'm curious about all of that, but I don't know. I'm curious about what they plan to do with Liam if they all go away. Like, I'm really, like, no one's talked about that yet, so I'm quite curious about that and what he thinks about it. But yeah, that, I suppose, is everything from the premiere of season 5. If you want to all get back to us in the next however long, some of our theories might be proved totally wrong by the next episode. Obviously, it's a very rapid coming out of the two episodes, and we might have totally got a bunch of stuff wrong, but never mind that. And yeah, if you want to reach us in the meantime and theorize about what's coming next, you can reach us on our Twitter, email, Tumblr, or Instagram, or Hyperball comment. You can check the page for all of those contact information there. And until next time, welcome back to Teen Wolf, I suppose. How did you feel about doing a recap again, Karen?
Wasn't as much of a hot mess as I thought it was going to be. We kind of fell into our usual roles, so I'm pretty happy with that.
Good. All right. Well, hopefully, you know, it will, it hopefully it feels good to everyone else, and it, you know, we'll be able to carry on for the rest of the season in a timely and sensible fashion. But yeah, until next time, we will see you later. So bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, we're going to do it. It's going to be great, and it's going to be under 90 minutes. It's going to be great. what?
I just, that is, we're shooting high with that one.
Dream.
Yeah.